Thank you for that, Clay Aiken, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast on Sports Byline, around the world on AFN, which I'm a big F-A-N. Also, of Hal Sparks, the actor, the comedian, the musician, the television star, the radio star as well. He's in town, by the way. He's over at Cobb's, which is one of my favorite comedy clubs. It's over there on Columbus. Been there many times. He performed last night. He'll be there tonight and through the weekend as well. It is Hal Sparks. How you doing, Hal?
I'm spectacular. I think everyone knows by now that that's you singing about you. You can I know Clay Aiken, sir, and you are no Clay Aiken.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Yes.
Was it Lloyd Bennett?
It's more like a T-Pain kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
I knew Jack Kennedy.
And you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy. Right. That's the reference I was going for.
If somebody really did think it was Clay Aiken, though, I kind of feel bad for him. It was the TuneIn app. It was a 99-cent sort of T-Pain.
Sure, yeah. That's what I mean. You can't go wrong. As far as I know, he doesn't use auto-tune. He's actually one of the people who can sing, but I don't know that. I've never seen him live or whatever. And when I saw Justin Timberlake perform, he sings through a refrigerator of electronic gear. It's an enormous brick of stuff. So I got to believe there's an auto tune in there somewhere. If there isn't, they're wasting their time.
Isn't Clay running for politics? Or isn't he?
Yeah. I mean,
I
think he's running for Gopher from the Love Boat's old seat.
Very nice.
Something like that, yeah.
Good reference. All right, Hal Sparks.
Most people may remember
that. Well, yeah, I'm older than you, so I get that stuff. Yeah. So your background, for people who are like, Hal Sparks sounds familiar, who is he?
Oh, we go way back. I'm a bon vivant, an artiste.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a stand-up. I've been doing stand-up since I was 15. I hosted Talk Soup, and I do all the VH1. I love this. I love the 80s, 90s, 70s, 2000s, all that stuff. I did a series called Queer as Folk. It's a dramatic series.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm on a series called Lab Rats right now on Disney XD, where I play a billionaire scientist inventor named Donald Davenport who has three bionic children that fight crime.
sounds very cool.
Yep. So I get shot with lasers and get to kick and punch people, and it's awesome.
Well, as a soccer journalist, I spent a lot of time in England, and they always say, you know, there's nothing queer as folk. That's their little saying.
There's nothing stranger than people. Yeah,
so they had the show.
It was a British series originally.
Yeah, they brought it over here. Now, and just, you know, our actors can always say, I can play anything. But, you know, you're a heterosexual man, and now you're playing a homosexual man.
Yeah.
Easy role, hard role? How was it for you?
It was difficult only because, like, emotionally, whenever you're doing a relationship drama, it's the most miserable work you can do as an actor. It requires more of you emotionally, just because it's somebody's always betraying you, you're losing best friends, you're breaking up with someone, and it's just on and on and on. And in this case, like, if you do it in a movie or a play, it's either the script always stays the same or it's over quickly. With a series, it could go on for years. And so that in and of itself is very hard. The sexuality of the character was sort of a minor affect or whatever. And we did sex scenes. We did kind of extraordinary sex scenes, if I do say so my damn self. But I don't know necessarily that any sex scene is a comfortable experience. I believe it was Cary Grant, I think, used to say, before a sex scene, he would, you know, or a love scene, he would go, pardon me if I become aroused and pardon me if I don't. because it was such an awkward thing with his leading ladies. It's like you're simulating sex with a cousin on the Thanksgiving dinner table in front of your entire family.
That's horrible.
Yeah, because there's 90 people around you. One of them has a stick with a giant badger on the end of it near your face, and they're spritzing you with water so you look sweaty and passionate, and it's freezing because we were shooting in Canada, and you're supposed to look in love. I mean, it's what could be easier?
Well, now, if you go to the Castro, do you walk down the street, they yell your character name?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So
I mean, they know me, too. I mean, I do a lot of work for marriage equality. I do a lot of political work as well, so they don't just know me as my character and call it a day. I've been fairly good at branding myself as a human being and not being stuck as a character. Although I realized when I got Talk Soup and then went straight into Queer as Folk how important that was, because I literally the first week I got Talk Soup, I walked down the street after I'd been on for just a week, and I walked on the Third Street Promenade in L.A. and a guy slapped me in the chest with his open palm just to get my attention, like whap, like that, and he goes, "Hey, Talk Soup guy." And that was it. Didn't know my name, but he felt it was okay to smack me in the chest. I'm a complete stranger, and he still didn't know my name. He just, Talk Soup guy. That's all he knew.
Rick Tittle with Hal Sparks in the studio. And it's funny, I'm going to segue into this because I remember Robin Williams told a story on Letterman that people to this day would say, "Hey, Mork," and he'd turn and they'd give him the finger. You know, it just he was still people were still calling him Mark.
Yeah.
Now we know about the you know, the tragic situation with him taking his own life. This is a guy that you not only knew, you were working on something with him, right?
Well, I did a show with him just recently. You did. He came and did Set List, which is an improv stand-up show. And I'd worked on the GI Bill, the new GI Bill that went through with Robin. He and Sally Field and I, you know, when it was first, it looked like it wasn't going to make it through the Congress. We did a lot of, you know, wheel greasing and did a couple of events to draw attention to it. And it, you know, it made it through, which we're very happy about. I think with him, interestingly enough, I think it had a lot more to do, and I'm not going to armchair psychoanalyze the guy, but when I was on CNN, they were asking me all about, you know, my experience with him, and I never got the feeling that he was so self-involved and kind of like, poor me, like a pity parade, that he would do this. And I was like, there's got to, I feel like there has to be something else. Interpersonal relationships being what they are, relationships going south, friendships, what have you. There's a lot of reasons why people take their own lives, and I'm not for any of them, quite frankly. But I was like, you know, a illness or an undiagnosed or a recently diagnosed illness that he hadn't told anybody about sounds more like the reason that he would do something like this. And it turns out his wife announced yesterday that he was in first stage of Parkinson's. And that seems more like why somebody in his position would do something like that. Jonathan Winters, who was his mentor, had died a little over a year ago. And I think it was probably the one person in the world who understood him, you know, person to person, because he was a crazy person, but in a great way. He was just, he was a coiled spring. Everywhere you went, he was just kind of ready to pop. And Jonathan knew what that was like. Jonathan was the same way. And Jonathan can put himself in a mental hospital a couple of times because the voices he would create in his head would stick around when they were no longer invited. So I get it, you know.
By the way, not to interrupt, I love Jonathan Winter's line where he said on a chat show one time that life is too short to ever answer the phone as yourself.
Yes, right. He and Peter Sellers used to do that. Peter Sellers would answer his own phone and people would think they'd gotten the wrong number, and he would argue with them for calling. Stop bothering me. You're calling the wrong house. There is a man here trying to sleep. My grandfather is very ill, and your phone is ringing all the time. He would just mess with people and hang up on them, and then he would call them right back and go, did you call me? You're trying to reach me? Like, I heard my next-door neighbor yelling or something. He would just make up these stories, and he would do this for, I mean, abundantly long periods of time. It's amazing. Jonathan's the same kind of, you know, energy, and I agree with him. I think there's an element of that seize life kind of thing that he and Robin both had in that regard.
On a lighter note, when you saw Sally Field, did you say, you like me, you really like me?
No, I called her Frog and said she had nice legs.
Very good. All right.
I'm a Smokey and the Bandit fan.
That's exactly right. I said, I'm older than you. I saw these things. All right. can you hang around another segment?
Of course.
All right, until your PR person drags you out of here.
Wrangle me.
I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back. We got another segment with Hawk.